Hey, good morning, Eastern Hills. We're so glad that you're here. Thank you for joining us as we finish our series, Our Great Shepherd. And hopefully this series has been helpful for you. I'm always a little hesitant to say this if you haven't heard it yet, but Alyssa and myself and our family, we are preparing to follow a really clear call from God on our lives to move to California and pastor a church out there. And if that's the first time you're hearing that, I'm very sorry. But I think that what I hope this series has done has given all of us this amazing reminder, if you're a follower of Jesus, or maybe an invitation if you're not, that there is a great shepherd for all of us, and that he was here long before I was here. He will be here long after I am gone. And it's that shepherd that all of us, including myself, are looking to lean on and follow the lead from. So I hope that's helpful for you. At the end of our service today, we're gonna talk about some next steps. If you're on our email list, you already know some of those, and we're just gonna kinda double click on some of that stuff. If you're like, what email list? You can sign up to get that at ehills.org/weekend. Just scroll to the bottom and click on the weekly updates button. We'd love to make sure that you can have that if you don't already get it. I also want to take just a second and highlight something that we talked about last week. Eastern Hills, get ready to clap. We are 40 years old, everybody. We did it. And because of that, we want to celebrate God's faithfulness as a church in this season. And one of the ways that we're doing that is through something that we're calling the Legacy Fund. And the Legacy Fund is an opportunity for us, dealing with kind of the transition that's coming, to be able to look into the future and say, what does it look like to make sure that we are in the best spot financially moving forward in a way that can make sure that the kind of search firm to find the next lead pastor of Eastern Hills, we can pay what's needed there, and then whatever transitional costs jump up along the way that you don't budget for because you don't anticipate this. If you would be willing to help us with that, last week I challenged you to get started with that by honoring 40 years of God's faithfulness with a $40 gift to the Legacy Fund. And many of you did that. Thank you very much. If you didn't do that, or maybe you're on the fence and you're like, oh, I'm not totally sure, I'd love to encourage you. If you want to find out more about it, you can find that at ehills.org/weekend. If you want to just give that $40 to represent and say, God, thank you for 40 years of faithfulness in this place. People that didn't know you but loved you in advance to invest in this place, you can do that at ehills.org/legacy. So just wanted to put all that out there. We'd be honored if you would participate. Now, before we get started, I'm going to pray for us. And if you've never been here before or never heard me speak, I pray kneeling. And I do that for lots of different reasons. One of those is because I'm struggling with my voice today. So I'm just praying that the Lord will give it to me all day. And then I'm also praying as we think about our great shepherd and what it is it looks like in our life to see the complexity of life with gratitude in the center of it, to understand and appreciate who God is. Maybe you need some of that. Maybe in your life, it's easy to say, God, there's things that I can take for granted. There's things in my life that are easy to throw away, but it shouldn't be that way. So even just right now, just humble yourself in your own heart. Let's go before God and ask him to do that for us together. God, I confess how often it is easy for me to paint with a broad stroke my life, to be able to look at everything as rosy and positive when it's not all there, and there's some things I need to take a closer look at. And then vice versa, God, when it can feel all like doom and gloom, but you are right there in the middle of it. Would you help us to see reality as it truly is? Would you be with us now, God, as we open your word? Would you help it to shape us, form us more and more in your image? It's in Jesus' name, amen. So I wanna take you back in time a little bit as we get started. Can you remember back to when maybe you bought your first house? We have terms for this. Sometimes we call it your starter home. Sometimes for you, it's like just the place you don't have to pay rent anymore. But we're all, every time we think about buying or maybe building a home, we're asking this question either out loud or subconsciously. We're asking, will this be our forever home? And what happens is that the investments and the decisions that we make during the purchase of every one of those moves really depends on our answer to that question of how long we think we're gonna stay. See, the investments in your home, they can vary from the finishes in the kitchen or changing paint to adding solar or considering finishing your basement. But the longer you plan to stay, the more you're willing to pay for that upgrade, for that customization, for that finishing touch. It's bittersweet, right, for us to think about this, because when we came here 7 years ago, we anticipated the house that we moved into would be where our kids graduated high school from. And we're in a neighborhood that we love, and we have friendships in that neighborhood that we deeply care about and don't want to walk away from, and hopefully believe that those relationships will continue just in a different form for many years to come. But I know some of you, you grew up in the same neighborhood your entire childhood. And even now, you don't live very far from where you grew up. You're a native, and we all know that, because you will not let us forget that, just so you know. Like, you don't need the sticker on the car. It feels kind of redundant. But you know, the thing is, today what we're gonna do is we're gonna look at something, because as permanent as some of that can feel, even if you've insulated yourself to make everything feel more permanent, as permanent as lots of those things feel, we discover in life that really just about everything is temporary. Just about everything is temporary. And so we're gonna look at the only thing that's truly permanent in our lives today. Now, I bet it wouldn't take you very long to think about a friendship or a situation that fizzled over time that you thought was permanent, a job that ended abruptly, or a season of your life that you were so excited to savor and appreciate, and then it turned out to be like the fall in Colorado, where it's like, oh, we're here. Oh, it's done. Like, that is how fast it felt like it went, you know? And for some of us, we placed a permanent hope in a temporary situation. And when that happens, it always creates pain and loss. See, over the last few weeks, we've been spending time in Psalm 23, which is a poem written by David, who is a king over God's people Israel in the Hebrew scriptures, what we call the Old Testament. He was really born into this very unique moment in the history of Israel. And he's been leveraging over the course of Psalm 23 all these different life experiences that he's had. He's leveraging his experience as a shepherd and as a king with banquets, and he's giving us this beautiful picture of a great shepherd who is actually permanent in our lives. This weekend, we're looking at the final verse of this psalm, and not only is it the final verse, but it will also show us how to put what's final first in our lives this week, and as we head into a season where setting our priorities is even more important for our lives and even for our church community as well. Now, our kids recently, they were playing a game together, and the game was, let's go into the basement and see who can stay in the basement the longest. This is like the hand on the Honda game, like last person with the hand on the Honda, you win the Honda. I don't know what the prize was, bragging rights, I have no idea. But they were like, last person in the basement wins. And I could just tell you, I knew before the game had started who was going to win, right? I knew because I could see who was walking in with the preparation and attitude necessary to win the game. And if you're wondering, yes, of course I was right. Absolutely, I was right about who would win. I know their personalities. I know who's gonna double down in their commitment and who's gonna bail at the first mention of a snack. Spoiler alert, he's three. The bathroom or a show that they're missing. Like, I just know. And sometimes I think that's all it takes for us too, is just a small little distraction. And the thing that we're supposed to be focused on, the thing that should be shaping our worldview, our perspective, our decisions, no longer is. I think that's true for our faith. See, the more we prioritize our faith, the more it can stabilize our life. But some of us, we've been putting more priority on things like status and stuff, especially in this time of the year. And when you see what you're actually watching and what you're actually experiencing is temporary, it can be wildly discouraging. But here's what I hope we discover together from our final verse in Psalm 23, that when faith is final, we put it first. When faith is final, we put it first. When we realize it's the thing that's really gonna endure, it's the thing that's really gonna last, it's the thing that's really gonna make a difference, then all these other things that seem to take up so much time, so much energy, and so much priority, they don't seem so important anymore. Now, in our final verse, we see some very confident assertions by David of what he believes God will do with his faith. And the first one is this, that it will last to the end. To the end. That David, even with all the blemishes on his record that we'll get into in a minute, he believes it will last to the very end. When I was younger, I could never let myself fall asleep when I was watching a movie or a show, even if I was really tired, until the show or the movie ended. Like, my body would not let itself shut down. You know what I'm talking about? Now, fast forward as I've gotten older, and it's easy to end the day, even if I'm watching something that I want to watch. This literally happened last night. Even if I'm watching something that I want to watch, I'm committed to seeing it. We've been waiting for it. We have popcorn. It's amazing. And I'm like fighting to keep my eyes open. The kids are finally down. The living room's picked up. Bags are packed for the next day. The dishes are done. And it turns out, so am I. And some of you are like, this is a little too PTSD, Phil. Like, don't talk about this. Maybe for you, you're a night person. I'm married to one of those. You can't relate to any of that. But I'm guessing that you have moments of exhaustion too. Or you don't know how you'll keep going. You don't know where the reserves are coming from. And maybe that's how you're feeling today. Maybe that's how you're feeling heading into this Christmas season. You feel completely out of gas and you're not sure how you're gonna make it through this holiday season again. You feel the pressure to perform, to deliver, to show up, to gift, to do all the things you're supposed to do with money, time, and energy. You don't feel like you have. And so David, he begins our verse today with a sense of how he would keep going for the rest of his life with so much stacked against him. He says this. He says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Now, if you've been with us, this is not a place that David's gotten to quickly. So at the very end, after he talks about this shepherd experience, after he talks about the banquet, and the first thing that stands out to me from David's word in this verse is the positive attributes that he gives to God. Those positive attributes of God's care for us, they're actually following David proactively. And by extension, they're following you and me. If you're a follower of Jesus, this is your reality. If you're not a follower of Jesus, this is your invitation. That the love of God is actually is interested in following you and me every day. And David does not say on his best days. He does not say on the days that he's killing it, on the day that he figured out he should show up to church because the Broncos are not doing so well anyway, right? He says every day, all of my days. We're actually seeing God be personified in the characteristics themselves. Goodness and loving kindness, which we see translated here, mercy, are simply the words that help us understand the components of who God is revealing himself to be. God is himself pursuing David. For those of you who follow Jesus, you probably know this. You've sensed it at times, but it's easy to forget it. David had started in his leadership so incredibly well as a young shepherd, walking with tremendous faithfulness and integrity, and then only to find himself near the end of his life, getting to a place where compromise had started to creep in. And eventually, he found himself trying to cover up an unthinkable act of rape by having the husband killed. He lost the respect of his family. He lost the credibility with his grown children to the point where the end of his life looked nothing like what he thought he had been building. But even with all of that and more in the rearview mirror, he could see God's goodness and mercy following him. He could see the hurt, he could see the pain, he could see the loss, and he could see God's goodness and his mercy too. See, it was about God and his grace, not David's qualifications. And that's really good because it means it's not about yours or mine either. That the aspect of God's promise for our life is so central to what it means to follow God today. As a Jesus follower, we should understand that. That you're not waiting for the day that you go, you know what, I read my Bible today, I showed up to church this week, I gave to the Legacy Fund, I'm in. Like, this is gonna be a great week. Thank God that's not how it works. See, David, he wasn't just considering what was right in front of him in his life or even the secrets and hurts that he carried inside and he was wondering when someone would figure that out. He took the time to look close enough in the rearview mirror in the midst of the loss and pain to see the goodness of God there too, chasing after him. Charles Spurgeon would refer to this famous theologian and pastor as the hound of heaven chasing you and me with his love, with his kindness, with his hope. What we see translated in this verse as mercy, it comes from a word in Hebrew, which is what this was originally written in, that is pronounced hesed. And the word can be translated into a number of different English words, but what's so important to know about hesed is that it is connected to covenant. It's connected to covenant. The covenant that God had made with his people, Israel, to be with him, even when they didn't deserve it. To direct their steps even when they chose a different direction. See, the thing about this covenant is that it isn't dependent on their obedience, but it's way more painful without it. The new covenant that we have in Jesus today, well, it's the offer of eternal life that starts now and lasts forever because of his perfect life in our place, his brutal death for our guilt, and his resurrection to demonstrate power over sin and death. This covenant isn't dependent on your obedience either. And that's really good news. But what we say around here all the time is that when God says do, he means he designed you that way. And when he says don't, he means don't hurt yourself. And some of us, we slip into this idea that once we understand that grace is unearned and undeserved, we can head towards heaven while living like hell. Now, David, he knew this hesed love. He knew that this mercy, he didn't deserve it, that he was actually supposed to motivate him towards obedience, not undermine it. But that out of gratitude, he, just like you and me, he was trying to live with God's will for his life in the final days of his life, even as he wrote this psalm, because that was the design for him. And living an obedient life out of gratitude is the design for you and me too. So I wonder, what has hesed, mercy, and love looked like in your life? What is the never stopping, never giving up covenant love of God that's been so kind to you men? Where maybe there are consequences of choices that you know are out of step with the plan of God for your life, and God has just held back some of those consequences out of his unbreakable love for you. Maybe it was the office relationship that went a little too far before you cut it off. Maybe you cheated on your taxes last year. Or maybe you didn't show up as a parent the way you hoped you would in this season. You've been kind of absent. Hesed love is the invitation that Jesus is giving to you and me, that just because you have disobedience in your past, you don't have to dread God because of it. And his goodness and his mercy, it can fuel integrity and obedience as you live into greater connection with your shepherd. And I know that there are some things, for some of you, you're like, those things you talked about, Phil, those are not in my past, those are in my present. I'm living an area right now that I know is out of step with the plan that God has called me to live my life. I'm calling myself a follower of Jesus, but I'm not living like one. And I'm saying that like part of God's hesed love for you is maybe this conversation to say before the loving discipline of God comes, you can turn, you can change, and he'll be with you as you do it. If you're a follower of Jesus, the moral of this story is that you will never outrun the love of God, and you will make it to the end of your story with God. He hasn't given up on you, even if you did for a while. It's not too late to turn back to him. For some of you, the message that you need to hear is it's not too late to turn to God for the very first time today. It's not too late to say, you know what, Jesus, this is what you've done. I'm in, and I never thought I'd say that. I never thought I would do that. Maybe that's the place for some of you. When I'm watching a movie, at the end of it, sometimes they will get to a place where I'm like, there's lots of things that still need to get wrapped up, lots of situations that don't seem very resolved. And then at the end, like you see these big, just the end words on the screen at the very end of the movie. And you just are like, what in the world? What happened to all of that stuff? It just feels so undone. And I wonder sometimes, what's gonna happen when your life, when my life says the end, and it feels like so much is undone? What are the things maybe that you will have made a priority that you shouldn't have? What are the things that you've been treating as permanent that have become bigger priorities than they really should be, because it turns out they aren't? We're in the process right now of purging our stuff in anticipation of moving. And it's a pretty eye-opening process, right? When we were in Seattle, we moved about every year because rent prices went either crazy or the person we were renting from would sell the house that we were in. And so every year or so, we had a chance to pare down. And so we've been in this house for almost 7 years. And turns out we got a lot of stuff. And as we did that, like, I can see the things that are now in piles to sell or to donate or to give away. And I can remember when that was a must-have for that kid. I can remember when that was like a thing we were excited to carry in the door, and now we're carrying it out the door. I remember that. But it gives you so much clarity when you think about what's next. See, when what's next comes into view, we look very different at what's left. And if you haven't done much thinking about what's next in your life, the next season, the next obstacle, the next opportunity, the next challenge, then everything in your life that's temporary feels pretty permanent. And I get it. If you do this, you will look different if you choose this path in a culture of easy. But the better life of Jesus, it isn't easier. It's richer because it's more intentional. Because when faith is final, and it is, we put it first. And our final words of this final psalm, or this final verse in this Psalm 23, communicates that our story and God's story, thankfully, is to be continued, that it's not finished yet. As a matter of fact, it never will be. You may not have realized this, but you're actually a part of a giant franchise. That's what we've all discovered as we've watched Disney movies. Let me explain that to you. At the end of a movie in a franchise, especially in the Marvel movie franchise, there's the credits, but then at the end of the credits, there is a post-credit scene. You'll see sometimes people will literally pull up on their phone while they're sitting in one of these movies, seeing whether or not there's a post-credit scene for this in particular movie. And it says, to be continued. It gives us this moment, this introduction that maybe some of the things that felt unresolved are a little bit more resolved. Maybe some of the things that needed some answers, you got some of them, and it shows you that the story's not done yet. That even if key characters aren't around for it, there's a bigger story and there's a bigger plan to bring a resolution to the story. Now, you didn't ask me this question, but I'm gonna tell you anyway. The best post-credit scene in a Marvel movie is the first Iron Man. You can debate me, but you're wrong. It's the one where all of a sudden we see Nick Fury show up and he tells Tony Stark that he's not like the only superhero in the world, that actually there's gonna be this whole group of them and eventually they're gonna create the Avengers and then way too many TV shows about way too many obscure superheroes. Like that was the moment, that was the genesis of that moment. So again, you didn't ask, but that's just bonus for you. Seriously though, David, he had plenty of regret in his life by this point. Plenty of things that he wished he could go back and change. Plenty of things that he wishes he had another shot at. And maybe you feel that way too. But there was something so special about what he anticipated. Not just because it was centered on God's grace, but also because of the way that others thought about death at this time and in this moment. He shares the way he sees it this way. He says, "And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, can I be honest with you? There aren't too many places that I would want to spend forever in. And I think sometimes we can paint heaven as a place that doesn't seem all that interesting for eternity either. We can shrink eternity down to our imagination, and that is a terrible disservice to what it truly is. We envision babies on clouds playing harps, but the vast expanse of creation fully restored in the physical and spiritual presence of Jesus forever, with only joy and no pain, no loss, no sin, no temptation, that's worth waiting for. As a matter of fact, C.S. Lewis, author and theologian historically a century ago, he says it this way. He says, "Aim at heaven and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you get neither. Your place in heaven will seem to be made for you and you alone, because you were made for it. To every soul, God will look like its first love, because he is its first love." That's what David was talking about. Now, here's what's unique about that. See, David, he didn't have all of that content. He didn't have all of that context. The house of the Lord is the picture that David knew. And the house of the Lord, it represents the temple at this time, which is where people would show up, this incredible building that people would show up to worship God together. We actually even sang about it earlier in the service. And I think that's a fantastic way to think about. Man, we get to show up and sing and celebrate together, but that's not all that David had in his mind about what this means. The hint that he gives us is that this is forever. This isn't regularly. This isn't for the rest of his life. This isn't when he gets around to it. This is for eternity. This is a pretty insightful look at eternity by David because of what other people thought at the time. See, the Jewish reader, they didn't have a fully developed vision of heaven, hell, and the afterlife because God was waiting to more fully reveal that in the life and ministry of Jesus that would show up hundreds of years later. But David appears to have some inside knowledge here. That while some Jews might have considered death what we call, they would have used the word Sheol just to refer to the grave, this sort of undetermined broad context of what might happen after life. David, he saw the weight and the value of believing and hoping in an eternity in the literal presence of his great shepherd forever. Now, even with his failures, even with his failings, he could hang on. He could hang on through difficult times, through the next obstacle, through the uncertainty, because what he believed was coming next. See, the forever that David is describing here isn't about a certain ritual or a particular building design or style of service. At the end of this beautiful psalm, David is saying that dwelling with the Lord is enough, that no matter what else is true, he can hang on because of this permanent provision by God. And remember last week we had that big table and we talked about what it meant that he had prepared for us a table in the presence of our witnesses, or of our enemies rather. And we talked about the importance to realize that he would sit down at that table. This word that we read in English, dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When we go back to that in the language that it was originally written, it means to sit. Not to perform, not to prove yourself, to rest with God as a component of what it means to spend eternity with him. See, this is a perspective that requires growth for all of us. I can remember when I was young that if I saw a family member from out of town, I had two questions in my head. One, are we doing something fun together? Two, did you bring me a gift? I've mostly grown out of that, mostly. As I've gotten older, right, you realize, well, I can do stuff whether you're here or not. I can get stuff whether you're here or not. But like them, having them here is what's most important. Let's just get in a room. Let's spend time together. Let's actually interact. Sometimes when I was young, though, if I knew that a relative was probably going to bring me something, I would be especially nice to them. Don't tell any of my relatives this, okay? Because I was anticipating the gift. Even though it wasn't really about them, it was about the gift. It was about what I could get from them. If I'm honest, I'm not sure that we've all grown out of that in our relationship to God. I wonder, where are you with God? Are you just hoping that he has a blessing for you and that the relationship he offers you is just a means to that end? Or have you discovered what David did, that this eternal reality of dwelling in the house of the Lord, sitting down with him, is actually worth more than whatever triviality we are tempted to focus on instead? Pastor and author John Tyson puts it this way. He says, using religion in an attempt to manipulate God merely distracts us from the goal of our faith. You wanna know what the goal of your faith is? Which is to enjoy an intimate relationship with him. See, last month, our family, we went to Disneyland, and you're like, how many Disneyland stories are we gonna get from this trip? This is the last one for this week. And we went to Disneyland with our kids last month, and when we were there, there was some debate about which rides we would do and which rides we would do first, because we knew that, you know, the day's gonna go pretty quickly and all that stuff. Turns out we were there for 14 hours, we could have done whatever we wanted. But we show up, and the ride that became the most important one was the Cars ride for Wells. Wells is our 3-year-old. He had never been to Disneyland before, and he loves cars. It was the longest line. It was the longest wait. It was the hottest. We didn't have the stuff that I expected that we would necessarily have because we put it in a locker, so everybody's asking for snacks, and we didn't have them. And Wells, our 3-year-old, probably did better than all of us in the line, including Alyssa and myself. But it was absolutely worth it because of how special that moment was for Wells as he enjoyed it. I got to sit next to him, and I have a video that I recorded as like a selfie video from my phone just of his face through the whole ride. There's one part where he got kind of scared. That was a little sad to watch, but the rest of it, he was thrilled. And I guarantee you, like, he talked about it for the rest of the trip. If you found Wells today and said, tell me about the Cars ride, he could give you a play-by-play review today. It was life-shaping for him. The investment paid off. See, God, he made an investment in you and me too. Not because of what we could give back, but because of his love for us. Because he created you and me in his image with infinite dignity, value, and worth. And so even though we failed and we continue to fail, he has provided the ultimate sacrifice in Jesus. See, Jesus, he connects the great shepherd that we've been reading about in Psalm 23 to his identity and what he would do for the sheep. He says it this way in John 10, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. See, Jesus' investment in you, it's without question. His love is beyond comprehension. But what about your response? Is spending time with him enough? Do we actually see his goodness and his mercy following us in our rearview mirror with all the mixed realities of what we face? Are we even looking for it? Are you too distracted by checking your email, by scrolling social media, by wondering what the next deal is or what the next delivery is going to be? Or could Jesus actually be the thing that shapes your decisions this Christmas? Is your eternal relationship with him enough as the thing that really endures through this life? Or is it just a means to an end to avoid hell or to get a blessing in the meantime? Psalm 23, over these last few weeks, it has provided a powerful mirror for us to use to see what really matters in our life and to see what shepherd we are really following, whether it's the great shepherd or a fake one. So my encouragement to you as we finish this series together is to use the mirror of these weeks to keep looking at it and to say, God, are my decisions lining up with your leadership, or am I settling for so much less? In a minute, we're going to sing a song together, and it's about this psalm. It's actually pulled from this psalm, and I hope that when we sing songs like this and we've studied passages like this, what it lets you do is the words mean more, and then you actually live them out. You try it out in your life. That would be the goal. And then stick around. For those of us kind of in the room together, we're going to have just a little family conversation after the song about some next step stuff. But before we get into that stuff, let me pray for you. God, thank you. Thank you for these beautiful words preserved for thousands of years. That God, we can pick up these words written by a shepherd boy turned king, turned disgraced father and grandfather, but still believing in you, trusting you. I pray for whatever season someone's in this room or watching online, that God, they would see your incredible leadership, that you are their great shepherd. And for somebody that doesn't know you yet, the invitation that you could be. As we sing these words, God, would you give us a fresh perspective of what it means to submit and surrender our lives to you today, because you are the only one worth surrendering them to. It's in Jesus' name, amen.